This is the Bore 11 Sunday session. It's a presentation with Michael Coughlin, who is a very, very dear friend, who I met face-to-face for the first time in New York in 2008. I think I'm saying it right. We had worked very closely and very actively in the Webheads in Action for 6 years, since January 2002, and we became very good friends. I think we have a lot of things in common, and we finally met face to face. And Michael has dedicated himself to voice tools for a very long time. Michael is in Adelaide, Australia, and he's a classic in Bore, in our Becoming a Webhead session, since 2004, and we love having him every year. He's very nice to be here for us every year. So he'll be talking to you about voice tools, and every year we decide to have a very basic presentation in terms of doing it at Yahoo Messenger, and then having his presentation, PowerPoint presentation, open either in the browser or as a PPT, and he will tell us to move the slides, etc. So I will give you the link again, because different people have come in, and you can click this link and get the PowerPoint presentation. I'm just trying to find here, Mariana, I can't help you at this time. Maybe you should maybe reboot and come in again, okay, please, because I don't understand why you're not authorized, okay? Anyway, those of you who have hands-free enabled, checked, please uncheck, because Michael will be talking, and when he will give us, or give you, the opportunity to ask questions, and if you have, if you would like to talk, he will give you that chance. So let's not get in the way. Let's all uncheck hands-free and let Michael Coughlin talk for us, okay? Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Teresa, and welcome to this session, everybody. As Teresa said, I'm in Adelaide, in Australia. It's about 10:40 p.m. in the evening on a beautiful summer's night, and we'll go for about an hour, talking not only about voice tools, but the whole concept of synchronous learning environments. Those of you who have already downloaded and opened the PowerPoint presentation should have a slide in front of you that says Think and Swim, the value of synchronous learning environments. Because when we talk about using voice on the internet, most of the time we're actually talking about interacting with each other synchronously. I'll talk about what synchronous means in a minute. So if you're sitting there wondering, what's this synchronous business? Apologies, but we will get to that. And I'm sure there's going to be quite a mixed level of ability and experience with the group. And congratulations, everybody, in deciding to join up with the BAW group, or the BAW group, because you're going to learn a lot and your life might change for the better over the next, well, you've already been at it for 2 weeks, so you've got another 4 weeks to go. If we move on to slide two, you'll see that at the slide there that says the structure of the session. So I have a loose structure of what we might cover in the next hour, but that can all change depending on what you would like to know, the questions you might have, and the sort of teaching you're doing. So we're going to have a really quick look at the historical context of using voice and the whole concept of online or e-learning. the value of synchronous interaction, the kind of skills required in a virtual classroom, and we'll talk about what a virtual classroom is, and the various ways that you can use synchronous activities in a classroom situation, online or in a classroom. But what I'd like to know first, I've had a bit of a clue because some people have already announced themselves. Slide 3 just asks the question, who's online today? So if you could, in the text chat, just type your name and where you are, that'd be great. So I'm Michael, and I'm typing now as I speak, Michael. So Rosanna's KSA, I wonder what KSA is, Rosanna. Helen's in France, Sue's in Jersey in the Channel Islands. Betlana, Fernanda's in Portugal. Hi, Fernanda. Teresa, of course, I know well. And, so Rosanna's in Saudi. Is that everybody? Maybe that's all that can hear me. Larissa's in the US, but from Siberia. And hi, Anna. We did meet some years ago. Haven't seen you for a long time, Anna, but good to catch up with you again. Hi, Valentina. And Anna Sara is in Romania. So, excellent. We've got an idea about where we all are. And my next question is, if you go to slide 4, it asks whether you are in an office, in a computer suite or a computer room, are you at home or somewhere else? So if you could just write that in the text chat, are you at home, at an office, at work, or somewhere else? So Alexandra, Teresa, and Dimini, I think it is, or Dimi, are all, it looks like everybody's at home with noisy kids in Helen's case. Okay, so this is a fairly, well, international group, obviously. We're all over the place in many different countries. But in terms of the sorts of locations we're in today, we're all in a home environment. That's not always the case. When you're working online, it's often the case that people are in all sorts of different situations. If you have a look at slide 5, okay, slide 5, has got the title of multiple venue presentations. And a dear friend of ours from Learning Times, who you may meet during the Bohr seminars, Jonathan Finkelstein, calls them MVPs. And the point about these MVPs, okay, so Teresa says you won't be meeting Jonathan this year, but maybe you'll come across him in your online travels, is that you can be teaching to an audience that is in many different situations. Some people can be in a classroom, some people might be at home, some people will be in an office, some people will be maybe in a restaurant, or they might even be sitting outside on the beach or in a cafe. And of course, if you're dealing with a group of people who are in lots of different sorts of locations, then you have to take into account that people are feeling very different in those locations. When we're all teaching in the classroom and standing in front of the class, we're all sharing the same physical space. And we more or less have a very good idea about the external factors which are operating on how we're feeling and our ability to take in what's been taught online can be very different. So you've got people in all these different presents, all these different places. Slide 6 talks about the difference between synchronous and asynchronous. So I referred to synchronous present communication earlier, and it's simply real-time communication. What's happening here now is synchronous communication. You're hearing me more or less at the same time as I'm talking. So it's synchronous in the same way that telephone conversation is synchronous, and the same way that text chat, which is also happening here in Yahoo Messenger, is synchronous. And it's interesting always to think about, before the internet came along, we didn't divide communication up into these different time scales. We did talk on the telephone before the internet, and we certainly spoke to each other in classrooms, but we didn't call it synchronous communication. We wrote letters to each other, but we didn't call it asynchronous. But now, we do distinguish between synchronous and asynchronous. So letter writing, email, forums, Facebook, these are all asynchronous forms of communication. Now, on slide 7, you'll see there's a question there for everybody, and I'd like people to say, if you are teaching in fully online mode, or you are about to soon, could you say so in the text chat? Most people in the world who are involved in e-learning are really doing what we call blended learning. They're teaching in the classroom and they're using the internet for e-learning. So there's a combination of e-learning and classroom learning, and it's the blended learning model which most of us... Okay, so Lola Sova, I'm not sure what your name is, but you're teaching totally online. Would you like to grab the microphone and tell us about that, Malasova? Who are you teaching, and kind of age and type of students? I'll stop talking for a minute. I'd just like to hear which context are you teaching in.
Hello, Mike. Thank you for giving me the word. My name is Larissa, and my ID is Lolesova. This is my last name. I'm teaching my students while I'm here in the United States. My students are in Siberia, and I'm teaching English writing for them every semester. And sometimes we do online collaboration of the American classes here, and the courses are totally online. And in addition, also I am a graduate teaching assistant here, and I am teaching educational technology, Introduction to Distance Learning for graduate students, and both courses are totally online. And students spread in the United States, in different states, some from Indiana, where I am now, and some students are from Illinois and different states, but almost from Midwest. Thank you. Yes, sometimes I do. As for the students from my city in Siberia, in Yakutsk, it is time difference 14 hours there in ahead, and we do video conferences, but connection sometimes is slow, but I prefer using installed video conference, not Skype. So I use it from the lab, so I forgot what is the title for this.
Thanks, Larissa. That's nice to hear the environment and the context that you're working in, and also to see that you're the person who invited Teresa to Yakutsk. I had a good long look at lots of Teresa's photographs from her time there and looked amazing. So a lot of what I have to say, you'd think in a way applies to only online environments, but I think we just need to get away from that thinking that it's only in online environments. If you look at slide 8, there's a photograph there of a group of students who are in fact in the lounge room in my house. And one of the people there in that photograph is in fact my wife, who teaches ESL, and she's had a lot of synchronous communication with her students outside of the classroom. So she teaches 4 days a week, and those same students communicate with each other at night in things like chat rooms and virtual classrooms. And it's actually made that group feel get very close. So it's not just an online or e-learning environment we're talking about. It can be a very valuable complement to face-to-face classes where people see people each other every day. I should say, any stage that you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, obviously you can do that in the text chat anytime. But if you have a question you'd like to ask on the microphone by asking a question, please just let me know and I'll stop talking and allow you to. I'm just looking at this comment. Oh, I still can't hear what we're talking about. Anyway, yes, we're on slide 8. But now moving on to slide 9. The slide 9 is about changing methodology. And it's a really quick summary of what's happened, if you like, in the history of e-learning. So back in the early days, in 1998 approximately, nearly all online courses and all e-learning was asynchronous. It was all written and it was very content focused because we didn't have the technology really to do much else. So people were aware that they could put up text content and they could discuss in forums and using email, but there was very little synchronous communication. Over the years, synchronous communication has become more and more a component of online or e-learning. And of course, now we've got all this extra rich media through sites like YouTube, and sites that allow images like Flickr, and podcasting sites and blogging sites. So we've got lots and lots of text plus voice plus images, plus movies, in a multiple variety of tools. And that last point there on slide 9, it says content can be co-created. And sometimes you will see the word, and you may have already seen the word, produces or produces. This is a combination of the word produce and use. So in these new days of Web 2, and you've probably come across this phrase, Web 2.0 or Web 2.0, we've all got the ability to publish in blogs and podcasts, put videos on YouTube, photographs on Flickr. So we can all be producers of the content. So we're creating content and we're using content. But this new combination word of producers has been created to kind of describe that process. Now, not every teacher is using this, and you might just think about your own teaching practice while I'm talking. Do you actually encourage your students to produce content which is used in the course? And there's no right or wrong answer here, but I would encourage people to do that. But it's very much a part of e-learning these days, that ability for teachers and students. And hi, Jennifer, good to see you. So now teachers and students can create content. In slide 10, you'll notice there's a graph, or a grid, called the communication axis. And you'll see that it describes communication in terms of asynchronous and synchronous, oral and written. So there are four different kinds of communication. In slide 11, you'll see how I've indicated that most classroom communication takes place in the asynchronous, no, let me get this correct, in the synchronous oral. Okay? So when we're standing in front of a group in a classroom, we're talking in real time. So that's synchronous communication, and it's oral. The other form of communication that happens in classrooms is that asynchronous written, which tends to be more structured, and these are the sorts of things we get students to do for homework, assignments, and exercises. And they were the two forms of communication that were dominant in the world before the internet came along. Now, with new technology, we have oral asynchronous, with things like voice boards, which I'll talk about in a minute, and we have written synchronous. What's happening here in the text chat? When we're writing in there, it's writing, or it's written, and it's synchronous. And it tends to be very minimalistic and quick and short and brief. And of course, it gets shortened and abbreviated even more when we're using SMS. Just hold on for a minute. I'm just going to shut the door. There's a bit of noise coming from the lounge room. Pardon me for a minute. I'm back. So, the existence of new technologies has enabled new forms of communication in education that didn't exist before. Moving on to slide 12, you'll notice there that it's got the heading asynchronous voice. And so, I'm departing briefly from the notion of synchronous communication, synchronous being real time, where voice is the thing that is most commonly used. But I just want to make the point, slide 12, we're on slide 12 now, that there are some wonderful tools in the asynchronous voice space which really can change the way you teach, and they're very, very, or particularly useful for language teaching. Most of you will teach in language classrooms that at some point you have a responsibility as the teacher to listen to people's spoken language, and your job is to assess students' spoken language. And if you have 20, 25, 30 students in the class, it's almost impossible to hear every student in the class perform every task. Oh, I'm just noticing that comment there about Tiny Earl being blocked. I mean, that's just so silly. So what I can do later is send the full URLs, if you like. I'll send them to Teresa, and I think it's Rosanna, and she can forward them to you and so on, but that's just so silly. There's no reason to block Tiny Earl. However, doesn't have to be any logic in these things. So, asynchronous voice tools, like it mentions there on slide 12, like the Wimber voice boards, are fantastic because you can actually, they're voice discussion tools, and you can pose a scenario or a problem that you want students to respond to, and everybody in the class can respond to that task, and you can listen in silence away from the rest of the group to that person's oral production and provide them with really valuable feedback, something which is very difficult to do in a classroom. Wimber is not free, although it's a great tool. That URL there on slide 12, the tiny URL, is a free and open board, so anytime you like, go in there and give it a try and see how it works. There's a couple of free tools that you might like to try too. And VoxoPop is one that is used a lot by Aiden Ye. She's a web head who lives in Taiwan, although she may actually be in the UK now. And she still uses a tool that used to be called Chin Swing, but it's now called VoxoPop. Yes, thanks, Rosanna. And you can listen to the URL to Aiden's students there at that URL, or you can create your own discussion. And it's a really great tool for, again, oral production that you as the teacher and students can listen to each other and, if appropriate, correct and improve each other's pronunciation. Can I say south? Something. Of course, Teresa. I'll just stop for a minute.
Michael, I was just going to say about VoxoPop that I think about 2 years ago in Bo, we created a thread, or I forget the word now for it. And one of the things I suggested, and it was, I think, in response to Anishwara, who is here with us, was that we each of us pronounce our name slowly, you know, maybe 2-3 times, because one of the problems we have in such an international group is to know how to pronounce each person's name correctly. And this was interesting because then, you know, we had everybody doing it every time they introduced themselves and so on, which is interesting. For example, I have lots of people calling me Teresa. Many webheads call me just Ter or Terry, but actually my name in Portuguese is Teresa. And just like Mariana was telling me yesterday, Mariana from Croatia, that my name is pronounced practically the same way in Croatian, which is interesting. So thank you for giving me the mic.
Thanks, Teresa. And look, it's probably a good time. It's good practice when you're doing this, when you're using voice, working in synchronous environments. It's actually good practice to stop every 5 minutes or so and allow people to ask questions or make comments. So here's an open invitation to everybody. Any questions so far or comments you'd like to make? And you can either do that in text in the chat or you can grab the mic. So I'll just stop talking for a minute in case there's a question or comment from anyone. Okay, good. Usually stop for about 10 seconds, and if there's no response after 10 seconds, I think it's fair enough to continue. How can we start a conference like that? I think you're probably referring to VoxoPop. And people may be shy, yes. Now, still looking at slide 12, there's another tool there, which is a really good one, called VoiceThread, and the URL given there takes you to a wiki page where there's a lot of examples of VoiceThread being used in education. But there are three really good voice tools. VoxoPop and VoiceThread are three. Wimber you need to pay for. You would need to get your school or college or organization to purchase Wimber, but they're excellent. So I think I'm going to just, well, no, let's go quickly into slide 13. Slide 13 just looks at the original synchronous environment. So when I first started working on the internet, most synchronous communication was just that, and you can just see a slide there that has some text chat. Going on to slide 14, you can see a screenshot of Illuminate. That is a web conferencing tool or a virtual classroom. And Teresa, will this group Have you already used Illuminate, or will they be doing that later?
Michael, we used it and as you know, I had problems because I contacted you about it, and Fernanda did too, Alexandra and Svetlana, and I'm sending the feedback I received from Alexandra and Svetlana to Jonathan and Daniel, just, you know, hopefully to help them decode the situation, I guess. Okay, so we will be using it again, I think, in week 4 with I forget her name now, in Venezuela. Larissa, help me. Rubina, yes, thank you. Oh, my aging neurons, poor neurons.
Don't forget, you reached the peak of your verbal abilities in your 60s. So speaking and writing reaches its peak in your 60s. Even if our memories aren't working that well, there's something to look forward to if you're not yet 60. Okay. So you've had an experience with a virtual classroom or a web conferencing tool like Illuminate, and obviously things went wrong, which in Illuminate is not usual. They are very reliable tools normally, but they are the kind of top of the range of synchronous tools, the best in their class. Slide 16, so I'll just jump through slide 15 and go to slide 16. The slide 16 talks about the sorts of synchronous tools which are around, and they range from the instant messengers like this one, so Yahoo Messenger, there's Google Talk, there's MSN, there's Skype. So they're all, Skype in particular is very, very widespread these days. Other sorts of synchronous tools, which are not voice-related necessarily, are things like Etherpad, which is a place to co-create documents, mind mapping, whiteboards, like you would have seen in Illuminate. There are virtual classrooms, and there's the names of a few there. So it's just going through the range of synchronous tools that are available. Slide 16 has a screenshot of Second Life. Second Life is a virtual world, a 3D world that people walk around as avatars and sit down and jump and dance and fly, and but they can also talk. I think it should be said, though, in relation to Second Life, that there's a number of things that have happened in Second Life in the last 12 months that have put a lot of educators offside. So Second Life is no longer a beacon for educators, and there are now alternative virtual environments, virtual worlds, where people do talk as they walk around looking like people in this photograph, dressed as avatars. I hate hearing myself talk. We all do. It's interesting, isn't it? And I've learnt, and Teresa, I'm sure you'll back me up here, in the early days of the webheads, most of the communication was in writing. So we had an email list and perhaps discussion forums. And somewhere, I'm not sure when exactly, around the year 2000, 2002, using voice tools became very common. And all of a sudden, the connection between members of the webhead community was much, much stronger, because it actually allows getting to know someone in a different way. When you hear people speak, it's the same person who was writing, but it just adds another dimension, and you do feel actually closer to those people. I assumed that when we went into the environment that had lots of voice tools, that everybody would want to use all these voice tools all the time. And we would come into Yahoo Messenger, and there might be 10 people in the conversation. Five of those people would not talk because they preferred writing. Five of those people, for example, did not write and would just talk. So what I've learned is that if you come into a synchronous environment, do not expect everybody to talk. And I think it's probably unrealistic and unfair for a whole host of reasons to make everybody talk. Give them the option of talking, but allow them to communicate back with you in text if that's what they'd rather do. Unless, of course, it's a listening exercise. It depends on your context and the goal. But don't force people to talk, because many of us would prefer not to. Interesting to think about that in a classroom, isn't it? That we, again, because it's a language classroom, there's a kind of responsibility, an obligation to make that person talk. Online, it adds a layer of complication that might be just too hard for people. So I guess the message is, go slowly and carefully with those people who would rather write and respond in text rather than talking. Any thoughts, Therese?
Can I say something? Sorry for interrupting. Mind if I say something? Can you hear me?
Therese, of course. Go ahead. Still with us, Teresa? Yes, would like to hear your thoughts.
So you can hear me, right? Okay. Anyway, January 2002, with a workshop similar to this, the first chat I took part in was tapped in, like it happens in Ball, and I was completely lost and was taken to another room by BJ and Suzanne. And they helped me, and I went back, and I wasn't planning on quitting anyway, but they really helped me, and I continued. The following week, we tried Yahoo Messenger starting with text and then with voice. And as I was going to say, those first 10 days, let's say 12 days, we associated a name to email and to text in tapped in. And then that second week, we started associating a name to a voice. And I remember that caused goosebumps. And it still does to me. At this point, I'm having goosebumps just remembering those things. And then the third week, we decided to start, and I have all of this recorded in images and so on. The third week, we decided to have video webcams here at Tapped In. And that was really the total excitement when we associated a name to a face. So that's just to bring back great memories. And what you were saying about, we have to be sympathetic with people who are shy to talk and so on, students, teachers, trainees, etc. Yes, I think we have to respect their feelings. And many people feel much more comfortable just writing than talking. And we have to bear with that, unless, as you said, it's really a listening and talking activity, and then They
just have to make a big effort, I think. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Teresa. For those who may have come in the last few minutes, and I think the numbers have grown, the URL there, and I'll just post it again, has a PowerPoint presentation that I'm talking to. So if you'd like to follow the slides with me, I'm now going to be asking a question that you'll find on slide 18. And it's about whether or not you have had any experience yourself using synchronous tools, and principally voice tools, in online courses that you've taught or studied. We heard from Larissa earlier, who's in the United States at the moment, but teaching online with her students back home, that she has synchronous communication with them. Has anyone else had experience of synchronous voice tools in courses that you've taught or studied? Okay, Sue. Speech to text and text to speech, these are those tools. It's Jeff, isn't it? Jeff Cooper? Would you like to explain, Jeff? You have to come on and grab the mic and say what they are. Thanks, Jeff. Yes, they are these tools that they either type as you talk, so you train them things like Dragon Naturally Speaking, I think was one of the very first tools that did this. So while you train the computer to become accustomed to your voice, and while you talk, it types. Of course, there are tools these days that will do the opposite, that if you send someone a piece of text, and these are particularly for people who people who don't see, they have screen readers who can actually read the text out loud so that you can hear it. Okay, just a little bit of information on slide 19. There's kind of a question there which may be rhetorical about whether or not you've used synchronous tools for small group work, one-on-one communication, whole class meetings, whole class instruction. And again, if we're talking about the online experience, the fully online situation, it's actually quite hard to get everybody together at the same time. And I think, Larissa, you mentioned this. So whole class instruction or whole class anything is sometimes unrealistic simply because of time zones. So what you need to do is set the class up, and those that can come at the time zone that suits them, they come, and perhaps you record the session, and the others who might be asleep or otherwise engaged listen to the recording at a later date, or you have the session in two or three different time slots so that you can cover everybody. But it's not very often the case that if you're teaching an online group, that you can have the whole group present at a time where they're all awake and available. Looking at slide 20, I might skip back actually. I'm going to go on to slide 21. Slide 21 has a question. Like to be able to copy and paste that question. I wonder if I can. I'm just going to try that. Why do you think it's important to include synchronous tools in online courses? Now, I mentioned at the start an example where the students my wife teaches also meet after hours, using synchronous tools for communication outside of class, or if you're in an online situation, the question remains, why do you think it's important to include synchronous tools in online courses or blended learning courses? So, Rosanna, I think that is, it's motivating. And again, if you'd like to grab the mic and offer your thoughts, please do, or you might put your comments in the text chat, but what are your thoughts in answer to that question? Why is it important to include synchronous tools? Okay, some of this might be obvious to some of you, but if you look at slide 22, Therese is suggesting that we hear you. You have to get people closer. Learners may feel more connected with others. Good. Rosanna has offered that it's motivating. On slide 22, this was a very informal survey I did some years ago with a large number of educators, students and teachers about why they used or how they used synchronous tools. And there was an approximate 50-50 split between pedagogical and social reasons. That is, half of the reasons that people thought that synchronous tools were important was to do with connection and knowing each other better, stronger sense of togetherness, community, group, and the other half thought it was good teaching practice. And the majority of people who focused on the pedagogy, on the good teaching practice, 30% of those said the most important thing was the immediacy of feedback. So what a synchronous environment does, especially if you're working online, is allow a student and allow a teacher to provide immediate feedback so that there's no waiting. And one of the things that people dislike most, yes, Larissa, put in the positive, students love immediate feedback. The flip side of that is what online students and probably students in general really don't like is waiting days and days and days for feedback. And in the online environment, the longer that period that students wait for feedback, the greater the chance that you lose them and they will never come back. Now, I want to talk a little, just quickly at slide 23. I'm going to move on to slide 24 because it's an interesting debate that people have about synchronous environments versus asynchronous environments in the wider context of flexible learning or distance education, online learning. So basically, when online came along, one of the big advantages that people put forward is that it enabled people to study in their own time. And I'm just looking at one comment there that sometimes that they need boys to come to an agreement in an easier way. And that's really true. It speeds things up. That asynchronous communication online is much better for that kind of reflective, discursive, exploring all the possibilities when you want to make a decision or want the group to come to a decision, go synchronous. So thanks, Juan. So back to the quote there on slide 24 from Terry Anderson. Terry Anderson works at the University of Athabasca, that is a distance education university. And he's written a number of books and articles about online learning. He's a really good writer, in my opinion. He's very, it sounds like a cliche, insightful about everything to do with online and e-learning, but I just think he's very clear in the way he identifies the issues. And so what he's doing in this quote there on slide 24 is identifying the fact that online learning was supposed to give people freedom to do things in their own time, and synchronous approaches are asking people to all show up at the same time. So it's working against that flexibility of people being able to do things in their own time. Well, Azari or Yusuf, sorry if I'm not sure what part of your username there is your actual name, but asynchronous tools, by their very nature, have a delay. So it's not immediate. But it's all relative, isn't it? If you send me an email, if I'm your teacher and you send me an email and I respond, within 2 hours, I think that's immediate feedback. If I don't respond for 2 days, that's not so immediate. A lot of this stuff is all about establishing the expectations within the course. So whether it's asynchronous or synchronous, and you'll do this with your students, or I think we should do this with our students in classrooms, is establish the expectation. So if you set an assignment and they hand that work, whether it's on paper or on the internet or in an email, people need to know whether or not you're going to respond within a day, within a week, within 2 weeks, so everybody's clear on when that feedback will be given. Now I'm just looking at the comment there from one. But she's happy the internet exists, so am I. No, you don't need a camera to see the slides, just go to this URL. No, that's not the URL. I'll just grab that URL once again where the slides are. Thanks, Jimmy. And I'm going to stop and just ask if there are any questions or comments people would like to make. So if you'd like to ask a question using the microphone, please go ahead.
Hi, Mike. I have a question. This is Larissa talking. I have a question about VoxOpop. How many students or how many voices can be recorded for one VoxOpop thread? And how long can we keep it for further recordings or just to keep as a file? And if it's if it depends on the connection, for slow connection. Thank you.
Well, others who might have used VoxOpop can correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think there's any limit to how many people can take part in a VoxOpop discussion. There may be a 3-minute limit recording. And how long do they stay there? Well, I know that Aiden has been using that for several years now, and they are still there. But with any of the free tools, we just have to be very philosophical about the fact that any of them can disappear any time. So, okay, so Teresa's saying that it may be possible to record more than 3 minutes. It's an excellent tool, Larissa.
Hi, this is Elizabeth Ann in Grenoble. Can you hear me? Okay, it was just to say about VoxOpop that I used it very successfully with a group of students I teach at the university. I had their emails before the course started, and so simply everyone introduced each other on VoxOpop before the course started, and it was a fabulous course. Everyone was looking forward to meeting each other.
Yeah, so it's that same point of it creates a stronger connection. There's no doubt that when we hear each other's voice, it fills out the picture and we feel more connected with that person. And I suppose we could say the same with video. If you add video to the communication, it tends to make people feel closer. But I don't want to get into that discussion here today about where video fits in all of this. Now, slide 25 has a number of things that are suggestions for resolving the tension between the asynchronous and synchronous approaches. So I mentioned before with that slide from Terry Anderson that it kind of, a synchronous approach works against flexibility and that anytime, anywhere freedom of online learning. Looking at the list of points there on slide 25, don't make synchronous sessions compulsory. Use tools that can record or archive the sessions, and we're doing that here today. I know that someone is recording this session, so that those people who are in a different time zone or can't make it here today will listen to the recording later, so they don't miss anything. As I said before, don't use synchronous instruction for whole class instruction. And a really important one, if you're looking at the slide, allow student use of synchronous spaces. So often that these tools are available, so teachers use them to communicate with students in class time or officially designated time. But where really interesting things happen is that when you just make that room available for students to use whenever they want. So these tools don't have to be made available only when the teacher's available. They should be available all the time for students to use informally. Now, we've got about 10 minutes left. And there's a couple of extra points I want to make, and I'm just looking at my slides here, and I'm thinking I might jump ahead. On slide 26, you can see that point that we mentioned before. Slide 26, use synchronous for social, spontaneous decision-making. Use asynchronous forums. Asynchronous communications for deliberation, reflection, considered opinion. Now let's think at the moment, and I think someone asked earlier, was mobile synchronous communication? Was the mobile phone or cell phone synchronous communication? Well, it's getting closer, isn't it? SMS and texting is almost synchronous. And it's interesting, particularly with younger learners, you can send them an email, they won't respond. If they do respond, it might be days later. If you send an SMS on their phone, they'll respond almost immediately. Sure, Teresa, over to you.
Michael, I was just going to comment that in slide 26, the synchronous for social aspects is extremely important, because I think that just to get together synchronously in an informal way is extremely important to build a sense of community, as we webheads know so well. So I would just like to emphasize that point. It's not just work. We need some fun and some F-U-N, is it? I think it's frivolous, unanticipated nonsense, right, Mike? So, you know, both are very important aspects of community building, and we webheads, I think, have been experts, in quotes, at that, because many people who know other communities, online communities, say that we are unique, and we have been together. I speak for myself for 9 years now with Michael and Vance and Maggie Doughty and David. Started, I think, in 1998. So it's a long-standing community, which is fantastic.
It sure is, and yeah, the role of voice has been crucial in watching the WebMed community grow and become stronger and closer. Is Facebook asynchronous? Yes. I mean, it's, again, if you have two people both in Facebook at the same time, actually, yes, there is chat in Facebook. You can have synchronous chat in Facebook, But the way that most people use Facebook, it's asynchronous. But we don't want to get too kind of hung up on this distinction between synchronous and asynchronous, because the boundaries are blurring. I just want to say that if you're looking at the slides, in slides, I think it's 31, 32, 33, you'll see examples from the WebHelp community of where they've used synchronous communication tools with students in really creative ways. So I'll let you do that on your own. Look at those if you want to follow that up later. But I want to talk about near synchronous tools. And slide 37 actually has reference to Twitter. If you are a Twitter user, you'll know that Twitter is almost real time. It's almost synchronous. If you have more than 30 or 50 friends on Twitter, there is just a constant stream of communication that rolls in. So we now have tools like Twitter, which are really in that zone between synchronous and asynchronous, and they blur the distinction. So SubG is saying that Twitter is real time. And where it's really amazing, and it was first obvious in May 2008, that when there was that really big earthquake in China, the rest of the world didn't find out about it until about 30 minutes after Twitter knew about it, because people in China who had experienced the earthquake wrote it on Twitter, and so the Twitter community worldwide picked this news up. And now we all know that it doesn't matter what you're looking for, it doesn't matter what topic, it's a really interesting thing to do, to go to Twitter, and even if you don't have a large number of Twitter friends, you can just go to Twitter and put in anything as a search tag, like a topic you're looking for, and Twitter will give you what's been said about that topic right now. So there may be occasions when Twitter is a more valuable search tool than Google if you want the very latest up-to-the-minute communication and information on a particular topic. Now, I'm going to go really quickly. You'll notice on slide 38, it's talking about the back channel. And the back channel is that thing now that using tools like Twitter, you've got people communicating about a presentation in real time. So imagine that you're out the front talking to your students, and while you're talking, they are communicating with each other and maybe the world about your class. And this is called the back channel, and it provokes very strong feelings for and against. There are other great tools like Cover It Live. If you look to Cover It Live is a live blogging tool, so you can have people writing about your session in real time. Slide 41 is about a tool called Poll Everywhere, where you can have people use mobile phones to send a response to any question that you might be posing as part of your class. And slide 42, and we've just got a few minutes to go, refers to the fact that Purdue University actually has produced their own Twitter-like tool, called Hotseat. So they encourage their students to use this tool, Hotseat, to respond. Hey, Larissa, can you give us maybe, what do you think, Larissa? How's it work? Is it good?
Oh, hi, Mike. I'm so glad you're talking about Purdue and about Hotseat. I'm in the research team since 2009 when we started using it. And I think so now almost about 20 faculty using it for different purposes, but the first course we did investigations. So Hootsuite is a kind of Twitter. If you create your Twitter account, you also can connect with Hootsuite, and it is text-based platform. You can type a question to professor, or you can type your answer. And professors usually use it for face-to-face lecturing in a large room for like 300, 400 students, and during their lecturing they answer the questions. So this makes lecturing more effective, and it can be used for synchronous and asynchronous purposes, how different faculties use it. And I think so it's very effective. So the first data we analyzed showed students' engagement and students' motivation increased, and so I think so it worked.
Thank you, Larissa. That's really good to hear, because I hadn't heard any first-hand accounts on how that was working. There's been a couple of other places in the world who have done the same. So the value of these real-time text tools that provide feedback as a class is happening can be of enormous value. They also involve a change in the way you teach. And I guess that's probably not a bad point to finish on when we're talking about any of these tools in e-learning. Really what they encourage you to do is change the way you teach. You might be the kind of teacher who has already been a student-centered teacher, who has enabled students to create content, to in a sense be partly in control of the class. But what these new technologies encourage you to do implicitly is to hand over some of the control, if you like, some of the responsibility, the way a class is run and for content being produced. And tools like Hootsuite at Purdue are enabling students to provide immediate feedback. So all of these tools are handing over greater power and responsibility to students. And of course, it depends on your teaching context, your teaching situation. It's not always possible to do that. But don't be the kind of teacher who is just keeping these tools to yourself. Someone wrote earlier, ask your students to make their own podcasts. They will hear their voices and they will talk freely, and they will. So give these technologies to students. Allow them enjoy the thrill of creating the kind of content and having the kinds of conversations that we've had here today. So I'll stop there. If there are any final comments or questions, I'm happy to hear them, but otherwise I'll hand back to Teresa and Jose, our wonderful moderators.
I would encourage anybody here to ask Michael a question or to make a comment about the presentation, your impressions, etc., before we stop this presentation, okay?
Okay, so Coach Carter, I think, is a film. I'm not sure. Thanks, Rosanna. And let's assume that everyone's happy, or at least wanting to leave, want to get on with the next part of their day. Thank you very much, everybody, for your company. I hope it was useful, and I need to send some URLs to Teresa so that those who are in Saudi who can't get tiny URL can see the links without the tiny URL. Okay, thanks everybody. All the best for the rest of the course or seminar.
Thank you, Michael. Great, another great presentation as usual. Another eye-opener to many aspects of voice tools and other things. And thank you for being here for us once again. that is preparing to leave for a few days in Caracas, so she didn't make it today. She sent me a message saying she was sorry she couldn't be here. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We had, I would say, around 35 people altogether. That's my count. That we'll be making a wiki page and naming the participants. And I would also like to thank all my dear mods for a fabulous job. So I will applaud them from here, from Lisbon, the Lisbon area. And have a wonderful day. And Michael, a final thank you from all of us. Okay, and I'll be expecting those links. And we will prepare the page and then announce it as soon as possible, maybe by this evening, because it's a collaborative work, okay? So thank you all, bye-bye.